Today I'll be talking about improving health in diverse communities via retailers' compliance with tobacco regulatory policies. This is a project of the USC Tobacco Center Regulatory Science. My name is Robert Garcia. The PI of this project is Lourdes Baez-Glenn and Garbanati, who couldn't be here today, so I want to make sure I acknowledge her as the PI and the first author of this presentation. I had no financial conflicts to disclose. So for this presentation, we're going to do an overview of tobacco disparities, talk about the FDA Tobacco Control Act, and talk about our T-Cores, the Tobacco Center Regulatory Science, and the Project 2 study aims and design, discuss the findings from our key informant focus groups, and discuss findings from our pilot study we finished conducting a few weeks ago, and discuss our lessons learned about how to work in diverse populations to improve health through retailer compliance with tobacco regulations. So first, I want to acknowledge our diverse team. We're multidisciplinary. We have several people who are from different backgrounds, both in ethnicity and in research, methodologists, behavioralists, community-based researchers. So that's what makes our project very unique and helps us have a great approach to this problem. One of our team members is right here taking pictures. So tobacco disparities. Most of them are avoidable, and they exist in vulnerable populations. We know that due in part to the marketing and promotion of tobacco processing at the point of sale. Like we know the menthol cigarettes are promoted heavily in African-American communities, or the price promotions are communities with low SES or with younger adults or youth even to attract them to buy cigarettes or other tobacco products. And retailers who are licensed to sell tobacco products in diverse communities are particularly challenged at the point of sale because they also have their bottom line themselves to try to obtain and to support their families, and also the pressures from tobacco distributors and the regulators. So neighborhoods with high concentration and low income or minority communities also have high disparities in tobacco use, especially you notice neighborhoods, been shown neighborhoods with higher amounts of youth or low SES, minorities will have more price promotions and more menthol cigarettes. And tobacco regulatory messages are not always communicated to these retailers in the most culturally or language-specific ways. We'll show some of that data about the language, especially for our retailers. And yet, retailers are expected to comply with regulations and sometimes aren't aware of regulations or who is in charge of the regulations in their community. So for the T course, Tobacco Centers of Regulatory Sciences, the federally funded centers, there's 14 of them across the nation, and our T course at USC focuses on vulnerable populations. As you can see, all the other T-Cores have a specific focus. The Texas one focuses on youth. The Maryland one focuses on biomarkers. So each one has a specific focus to help the federal government in their regulatory practices on tobacco products. So today we're talking about one of the projects of our center, which is we call it Project 2, but it's a retailer study. And the aims of this study is to examine knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs of small independent retailers about tobacco products. So we're not going to the big 7-Elevens or the Chevron gas stations. We're going to small mom-and-pop shops that have probably not the same access as the big shops do. And we want to examine the most effective ways to communicate with retailers in vulnerable communities, including traditional and non-traditional methods. And we want to examine how key opinion leaders from these communities, including retailers, view the credibility of the FDA as a reliable source of tobacco information, or if they're even aware that they are in charge of tobacco regulation. So to give an idea about the diversity of LA, the map on the right is the population community in LA County alone. And then you see each color represents a different ethnicity and the concentration of that ethnicity. As you can see, it's very colorful. It's hard to pinpoint neighborhoods sometimes about which one's more dominant in one ethnicity or not. We're also working with American Indians in California, and the map on the right shows the different reservations and rancherias in California. And for the other populations, we are just going to focus mainly in LA, but for the American Indians, we are going to have to go throughout the whole state of California to make sure we increase our numbers. And we're focusing on African Americans, American Indians, Hispanic Latinos, Koreans, and non-Hispanic whites as a comparison group. We recently added that group, so now all the data presenting here for that group is included. So for our participants and instrument stations, as you can see, we have several sub-studies. The first sub-study was the focus group, which we discussed today too. And we had four groups per ethnic community, trying to obtain in between 160 to 240. The pilot study was mainly to test our retailer measures and our protocol for studying the retail environment. And we're using community health workers for our data collection, so we want to see what we're going to have to do for the training to make sure it's done correctly. And then sub-study two is the actual in-person retailer interview, where we have a whole battery of questions we're trying to ask the retailer about regulation, communication, awareness of the FDA, awareness of different regulations. And then sub-study three will be the retailer observations, where we will choose certain retailers to observe the store, see if they are in compliance, if they have products within 3 feet of the floor, or buy candy, or they sell single cigarettes, and so on. So for the focus groups, we examined perceptions of key informants regarding FDA messages and methods of communication. We had 8 focus groups, 2 per community, and the non-Hispanic white focus groups are currently being conducted and recruiting them, so we don't have that data yet. So we had 70 key opinion leaders for the other groups, 4 groups, in 90-minute focus groups. And we had people from health, media, business, religious, government, and education backgrounds. And we recruited these people we had a long-established record there in L.A., so we knew certain organizations to ask. We wanted to make sure we got a good representation from all these organizations. We didn't want to just have a health-heavy focus group, because then, there'll be more anti-tobacco and more aware of regulation. So we wanted to make sure what other leaders in the community were aware of the regulation, because, for instance, media people play a large role in our communities. So if they're not really aware of what their perceptions are, it would affect how the community itself would view tobacco regulations. And before we conducted the interview, we also conducted an anchoring survey, which asked about what they knew about tobacco regulation, and if they're aware of the FDA, and what their perceptions of tobacco regulations in the retailer environment in their community. And of course, we also wanted to see the perceived credibility of the FDA and how much aware that they were of the FDA. And so as you can see, we had a good representation overall. We had a good turnout from the African-American community, but overall we were able to get pretty much equal for each community of our ethnicity breakdown. And for the most part, most of the key opinion leaders were either health, business, education backgrounds, but we did have a decent showing from the other backgrounds of media, service, and religion. And we asked in the anchoring survey, we asked them, do they feel that the retailers in their communities, are they informed of tobacco laws? And as you can see, most of them thought that their communities were moderately to well informed of tobacco regulations, which is a good sign. So the key opinion leaders, we asked them about their FDA awareness and trust. So 62% of participants recognized the FDA logo, which is right there. That's the same logo we put in our survey to see if they were able to recognize it, which is very well, we thought. But 56% were aware of the FDA ability to regulate tobacco products and considered them a reliable source of information. But when we asked them what they thought their community was aware of, only 42% thought their community retailers were aware of this role for the FDA and would also consider them a reliable source of information. So from the actual focus group, we asked them about communication and how they felt the FDA should better communicate with retailers about different regulations so they can be aware of it. So one of the themes across all the focus groups and relates to this quote, they said that something should be done on a public service announcement, but it has to be a clear on message. A lot of times the messages in PSAs weren't clear to the community who it was for, what were the infractions, how was it going to be enforced. So they said it needed to be clear, but easy to understand for all populations. Continuing on with communication, another theme was they thought about most people have a phone and text messaging, so people are now used to having something quick to read. They don't want some long documents, something that's going to take them a while to read, because they're busy retailers, especially small stores. They don't have the time to sit down and read a whole packet of information, so they need something quick in a text message form that they can understand quickly. And messaging also the phone apps, besides regular text messaging like WhatsApp, Google Hangouts, other Facebook Messenger, will also be effective, because a lot of people prefer to use that over their Wi-Fi than their regular cell phone service. And of course, we also talk about the use of social media such as Facebook or Twitter as a communication outlet to disseminate information. They felt, especially with the new role of new type of retailers coming about, they're more on social media, so it'll be quicker to get more information out to more retailers instead of one at a time. Be a quicker campaign. So now we're going to move on to the retailer interview survey and retail observations. This is the pilot study I was talking about. We had only 8 per community just to see how our measures were working and how we could better improve our data collection. And there are some pictures of that going on. In the middle picture, you can see one data collector doing the retailer interview survey and the other data collector with a backpack is doing the observation portion. So we try to do them at the same time to minimize our time in the store and to we're not so we don't get in the way of the retailer. So there's the total of 37,000 stores in California, according to the Board of Equalization List, which is the board that regulates tobacco retailers who provides the licensing. And we've had issues with that data set because a lot of retailers don't exist anymore. They're not in the same address they're listed, or they don't list a lot of retailers. So it's been a very complicated process with that list. We chose our communities by zip codes with predominantly African American, Hispanic, Korean, and non-Hispanic white residents. So I think our threshold was 30% that it had to be in that community to be considered a Hispanic community and so on. And again, we focused on Greater Los Angeles. And we randomly selected stores and zip codes that were within 20 miles of our office for the pilot study. An American Indian population, we're using a convenience sample that were recruited in Northern California because we have some good alliances there, so it was simpler to just to get the pilot study done quicker. So when we asked them about the retailers about their English literacy, this is where I was talking about communication, where we had to be careful about how we deliver messages to them. As you can see, only the non-Hispanic whites and American Indians had above 50% threshold for that they could fill out forms in English very well, extremely well. For Hispanics and Koreans, it was the lowest with 13% and 25%. And when asked about what they speak at home, again, with the Koreans, Hispanics, even with the non-Hispanic whites, they don't speak English at home often. With the non-Hispanic white, and LA is a very diverse population, that includes a lot of former Russian Federation countries, Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, and other Middle East countries that they're considered non-Hispanic white, but they aren't mainstream non-Hispanic white, so they do speak other languages at home. So that's something that we need to make sure we inform people who keep designing the communication messages. And if they ask if they speak English well to very well, most of them, at least over 58 or more, except for the Korean population, again, at 38%. And if their ability to read in English, most of them are doing pretty well, too, at 50% or above. So we asked the retailers themselves about their awareness of the FDA authority to regulate tobacco products. You can see 86% were aware of the FDA, and only 11% were not aware of this role for them, which is pretty good news. But when we asked them about their belief if the FDA has the right to regulate sales of tobacco products in the stores, only 41% said yes, with 34% saying no and 20% saying not sure. So there's still some messaging and communication that the FDA should do to make sure that people understand that it is their right to regulate these products according to the 2009 Act. And then we asked them if someone was having problems following tobacco rules, which of the following could help others follow tobacco rules? So what they thought could help others understand what they need to do to follow these regulations. And you see the highest numbers with educational materials or checklists with or posters with the rules by the checkout corner. Something quick to read, easy to see that, oh, there's a checklist. You can't do this. You can't sell loose cigarettes. You can't sell to minors. So they could see clearly what they needed to do for all their employees, too. And then we asked them in the future how they would like to receive tobacco regulatory information from what type of communication methods. And the highest one was electronic media from the FDA website, email, or internet, was 78%, and then followed by print media and traditional media, such as TV or radio. A lot of the retailers were more towards the traditional media side of things, so that differed from our focus groups, where focus groups were more trying to go to technology or social media. So going with the lessons learned, having the multicultural team was important in all aspects of data collection process. Like I said, we used community health workers from different communities that were specifically relevant to those communities. And it was helpful because the community health workers provided insights to the data collection process. They knew if a store was closed or wasn't a safe street to go down to. So they were very intimately aware of their community, so it helped us a lot in that process. And sometimes those surface level similarities helped us with the initial meeting of a retailer. They welcome us easier if they knew the person was from their neighborhood or the community. And we had to be considerate of the time of month and day when we're going out to collect data. Because retailers, of course, are very busy. They have a lot of clients who's walking in and walking out, so we can't be in their way. So we had to understand if we're in the middle of the interview survey, we have to stop what we're doing so they can attend to their customers. And we're very clear about that when we go into the store. And we also need to take that into account the attitudes and needs of diverse communities. Each community is very unique and different. We found that especially surprising when we looked at the non-Hispanic white population, how diverse they were within themselves. So we really need to not make sure we look at the bigger group, but actually the individual communities and what they need to be in compliance. And we also need to aim to improve the image of the FDA in all communities, especially with American Indians. With the historical issues with the federal government, any government entity with the American Indian population, we got to make sure that federal government communicates the correct way and appropriate way with these communities. And any printed material should be culturally adapted and properly translated and tested. When our focus was, one of the big findings was about a campaign they did for retailers and wasn't really receptive to several communities, Hispanic and African Americans per se. I won't mention the name because the FDA already has learned this information for this retailer environment, but that was one thing that our focus groups probably helped inform the federal government that needed to be revamped. And so, and local agencies and organizations are eager to collaborate with the FDA. From our key opinion leader focus groups, a lot of the people who work with local advocacy groups and organizations, bro, tell them to come to us. We're eager. We know the community. We know what needs to be done, so we're eager to work with them. And we have to be open to different channels of communication preferred by each community. As you can see, the key opinion leaders thought more about social media and text messaging, but the retailers were different about what they preferred, with more TV, internet, and phone, traditional phone. And most retailers were aware of the FDA, but less than half believed that they could regulate tobacco. And consequently, more education is needed for retailers in vulnerable communities regarding FDA authority and preferred language of retailers. As you can see, our language is very diverse for our retailers in these four groups, so it has to make sure that the population receiving the messages can understand it, and it's a culturally appropriate language too. And due to language barriers, community health workers that speak the language of the minority retailer are key when collecting data. Once again, it's establishing the relationship, the trust, because this is a very delicate subject for a lot of retailers, because they know, especially in California, we have a high regulatory environment with the county, state, and now the federal government, different levels of regulation. Some retailers can be hesitant to talk about this because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble, or even if it wasn't a tobacco-related infraction, they already had some past issues with regulatory agencies, so they can be hesitant. So having that same language is very important, so we can gain that trust easily with these retailers. And a clear understanding of various tobacco products sold, such as cigarillos, cigars, and e-cigs, and how beneficial they are to their bottom line among retailers may produce strategies to overcome impediments to compliance with regulatory policy in vulnerable communities. In our focus groups, that's one thing some of our participants said, that they need to be understood, the infractions had to be understood, the penalties for the regulations had to be understood, because for the retailers, a lot of these retailers, they make very slim margins, and this is their mom and pop shop, so it's very important to support their family, and even in some cases their community. It might be the only retail outlet in their community, and it helps support schools or even their community in a sense. So sometimes selling that loose cigarette is more advantageous because they're not aware of the infractions or penalties they may face. They don't see the risk there, so it has to be clearly communicated with them. And any future regulation on e-cigarettes needs to reach not just vape shops, but actual tobacco retailers. Right now, we're doing a pilot study in vape shops right now, but also a lot of our retailers are starting to sell e-cigarettes because they see the popularity of it, and it's another chance to make some more money for their store. But there may not be understood that the FDA might have a role in that too soon. And of course, our findings could benefit other investigators and regulatory research in retail and vape environments, and help with the FDA communication methods to these retailers, including retailer education campaigns in vulnerable populations and linguistically diverse populations especially. So to conclude, we need better communication with retailers in language and culturally appropriate ways that can improve compliance, so they understand what they need to do and what they need to accomplish to be in compliance. And better compliance with not selling to minors, as well as removing products of the shelf that are not in compliance with the FDA, could lead to reductions in tobacco disparities in vulnerable populations. So if we're able to get them to be in compliance better, it's going to help us reduce the nicotine addiction that we have in several of our communities and the burden of disease that results from that. And it's important to find creative ways to communicate with retailers in diverse populations to improve the health of specific populations. And the needs of retailers may vary based on income, how much they're earning from the store, and their ability to read in English and speak in English, and their education level, of course. And improving barriers to compliance will go a long way in resolving disparities in our vulnerable populations. We want to acknowledge our funding source, and that this is the opinions of our researchers and not officially of the FDA. So this is not an official stance from the federal government or NIH, and it's solely our responsibility. And then again, once our investigators, their names, and of course my advisor and the project PI, Dr. Lourdes Valles Gonegar-Bernati. And then there's our contact information. And thank you.